This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome to the 45th. Rabia here. Hey, Susan.
Hey, Rabia.
How you doing?
I am okay. I will say that I am normally a notorious night owl, but we're recording late on Wednesday, and I'm dragging a bit, so...
Listen, I've got like almost two decades of age on you, so you should be like up and peppy.
Usually, like, I'm good to go until midnight. It's been a long day.
I think we got to do one of these episodes where you're like drunk Susan doing impeachment.
At this point, I just like pass out. I'm tired.
Well, you're also tired because look, I don't know if listeners know, but if you don't know, follow Susan online. You'll see it. Susan's been making the rounds. You are now a like DC.
No.
More than one. Okay, let's say you did a radio show, right? Can you tell us about that?
I did an appearance on Dan Abrams' show. He has a radio show on Sirius, which I do not have, so I couldn't actually listen to a show. But I did post a clip, the part I was on, onto our Patreon.
Oh, good.
Give it a listen.
Okay.
It was kind of interesting because it was a radio show, so you had all the conservative radio listeners calling in. They're very...
Were you nice?
Relatively polite. It was not like Limbaugh or something like that. It was definitely a cut above that level. But
Okay.
I was polite.
I think it's great that they had you on, considering if that's what their audience is like, that means they're pretty, you know...
It's daytime radio, so I think it's always going to be the case.
Okay. And then you were on CNN, right?
Mm-hmm.
With
Brianna Kahler.
Okay.
And then, hopefully, depending on when this comes out, I don't know exactly when the episode's coming out, I should be on Ari Melber at 6 tomorrow on MSNBC.
Right. And you have been catching everybody's attention because of a recent piece that you wrote
Because Sondland's a goddamn liar.
Yes. It's the cell phone records. If you guys don't know, man, Susan and cell phone records. Don't fuck with her on cell phone records. But, right. And you wrote that piece for Just Security. Well, it started with the Twitter thread. I remember when you're like, wait a minute, there weren't two phone calls.
Yeah, normally these days, the problem with Twitter is like, I mean, I've got so much like going on with the podcast and whatnot, my poor blog gets neglected.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll tweet stuff out and that's good enough, but it's not actually good enough. So someone's like, you should write an article for this. I'm like, yes, I should.
Yeah.
So then 20 pages later.
No, is okay, how long was your article?
It's 20 pages.
Is it really? Susan?
Yeah. I don't do short form.
Oh my God. You did do 40 pages like on... Jay's cell phone stuff. I remember that. Okay. Well, I did not read the article because I was like, oh, I read the Twitter thread, so I know what's in here. So I was like, fine. But yeah, that's the way it happens. And then the phone calls start coming. And I have a feeling they're going to keep coming because of your analysis and, insight and just eagle eye on all of these things. So blow us up, Susan. Blow us up. Awesome. Okay.
Yeah. Well, hopefully I did better than... Alan Dershowitz did on a recent appearance about a week or two back.
Oh, okay. Let's talk about Dershowitz. And then we're going to get to, we'll get to where we are today, which is, was today the first day of the House Judiciary hearings?
It was.
So we'll get to that. But let's talk about Dershowitz. Let's start, a week ago? What happened there?
Well, let's start even farther back. Dershowitz is like the most notoriously always wrong person that I'm aware of. Like there's not a single issue in the world that... I'm on the same page as Dershowitz. That's just mm-hmm. consistently, always.
Mm-hmm.
He's terrible. But here's what he said on Laura Ingraham's show.
You used that word, and then she went nuts talking about how the president's not the king. Of course the president's not the king. The president's far more powerful than the king. The president has the power that kings have never had. He's very, very powerful office, and the framers wanted it that way. That's why they required for impeachment very strict criteria to be met. And we don't live in a parliamentary democracy where parliament can just vote to remove a leader, a prime minister. So this decision itself has no big impact. All it means is people have to show up and then they can invoke the privilege.
This is one of the strangest things I've ever heard. This is literally like antithetical. Didn't we fight a revolution for this shit? Like, this is like so completely... Like, it's just so simply wrong.
Yeah, the problem with King George is it wasn't powerful enough.
But he was responding to something that was happening. He was responding to, like, what's going on, a couple of court cases that the Trump administration is struggling with right now.
Yeah, so catching up from over the Thanksgiving break, we had a few rulings come out. One was the Mazars ruling of Supreme Court. It wasn't a ruling, actually. They just basically decided we're not going to decide yet. So the question of whether or not the House gets Trump's tax returns still on hold. But the lower court, Judge Jackson, ruled in a lawsuit brought by Don McGahn, where he is trying to avoid testifying for the House, and Democrats are trying to make him testify there. And in her ruling, she wrote, it's a great ruling if you're interested in this kind of law. Definitely worth checking out. But
ooh, this is a great quote.
She wrote, stated simply, the primary takeaway from the past 250 years of recorded American history is that presidents are not kings. This means that they do not have subjects bound by loyalty or blood whose destiny they're entitled to control. So she, you know, brought out the rhetorical fireworks to say this whole argument from McGahn that he does not have to testify, like even appear. No, there's nothing that says that. There's nothing that says that the president can decide who and who does not get compelled by subpoena. Now, when he shows up, and he will show up, there are privileges he can claim to avoid answering certain questions. So that's probably the next litigation that we'll have to go through. But the idea that he could just not show up, no, no.
Well, I mean, like, they exert this one privilege that I keep hearing about was, like, absolute immunity or absolute, like, everything is privileged as long as far as this administration is concerned, including conversations that did not happen between the president and somebody else, but like two third parties.
We have Lev Parnas and Igor Fruman saying they're going to like invoke executive privilege for their defense and their criminal charges. It's crazy. I mean, and also it's not even executive privilege because executive privilege is a very distinct body of law that gets invoked by the president. It's his privilege to invoke. He's not invoking it. This is just a full on, we're not agreeing with process. We're not going to go. We're not going to show up.
Wasn't there another ruling that I think yesterday happened with Deutsche Bank, right?
Yeah, Deutsche Bank is, well, that was another court ruling that says they have to cuff up their records on Trump. So it'll get appealed. We'll see.
I mean, really, do we have any like doubt about how this is going to go when it gets to the Supreme Court?
Yes. Okay. Yes. I don't think it's a foregone conclusion at all. I think that it's going to be a hard fight. And I think this also kind of goes back to some of the Dem strategy right now and how they're handling impeachment, because the swing vote will be Roberts. And he is not a shoo-in on all these issues. Will he go for the extensive executive power argument for a lot of them? Yeah. Yeah, he will. But not all of them. So it's definitely not a foregone conclusion.
I'm still actually kind of shocked that there's literally been not a single leak of these documents in all this time. There's so many different avenues they could have come from, but
not really. I mean, it's like people in Trump organization, they don't have any interest in seeing him leaked. People in the accountant's office who also have no interest in seeing him leaked. So
I mean, maybe as an entity, yeah, as a corporation, yeah, but you know, there could be just one rogue employee who's like, screw Trump.
I don't think the accountant field is known for its rogue employees.
Rogue employees. Damn it. All right. Okay, so we did conclude, I don't know when it wrapped up because I was traveling so much last week, but the House Intelligence Committee's investigation, the impeachment hearings, 2 weeks, got wrapped up, I think was it last week, and then very quickly, a report, which I guess
Monday
is
Minority Report came out, and Tuesday the House report came out.
Okay, yeah. And is that authored by Adam Schiff, or is it kind of like a collaborative?
It's authored in the sense that, like, you know, he's the head of the committee, but did he write that? No. I can guarantee you there are some poor staffers on the Hill right now who did not eat any turkey over Thanksgiving because they were slaving over 300 pages of that.
Yeah, it's like 300 pages. And I did briefly see some of your tweets about it yesterday before today's hearings began.
Oh, girl, I haven't even gotten to that yet. I've been tweeting about the freaking Minority Report. I've barely gotten like a quarter, maybe a third of the way at this point through the Majority Report.
Let's talk about the Minority Report for a little bit. Is it just the same stuff that we heard?
It was bullshit. Like, I actually gave up on the thread because it was just so bullshit. I was like, this is a waste of everyone's time because there's no arguments here. There's nothing that's like coherent. It is just talking points and ignoring. Well, I will say I was a little bit impressed is very much too strong a word. I was a little bit relieved to see that the Minority Report did not, and to back up a bit, the Minority Report's a report written by the House minority on the
Republicans.
Committee, so Republicans. And they do their separate report in addition to the House's report by the majority that comes out as well. And the Minority Report did not fully endorse the craziest version of the conspiracy theories coming out.
Okay. Oh, so, wow. That's quite a save.
I know. But I was really worried they would go full on. They definitely tried to sidestep and like they did a little bit delve into some of the Hunter Biden nonsense. But overall, they mostly just engage in denial of reality.
Did they triple down on like the kind of stuff we're hearing in the media now where there are Republican senators saying, we think it was Ukraine that was
did definitely do that.
I would think that's kind of on the crazy end of that spectrum. When every single agency involved in investigating this shit is like, no, that's not how any of this happened.
Also, it's super dumb. Like, it's like, oh, this then ambassador from Ukraine wrote an op-ed where he's like, it's not great that Trump is saying Russia should be able to invade and annex our country. That's not something we love.
Right.
That is not election interference.
So I've got a basement, and my basement has sofas that are, I kid you not, 20 years old. 20 years old. They're That's almost all. As old as my oldest child.
Your house is lovely. The basement has been neglected.
Nobody can go into the basement. Only, like, my children are allowed there and guests who stay overnight, whether or not they're invited. Yeah. But, yeah, there's some pretty gross sofas. There's probably all kinds of, like, living organisms in this. But they will soon be replaced with some brand-new furniture from Joybird, and I'm so excited.
Joybird is pretty amazing. If you're like me and have a style that involves, well, honestly, if you want more normal colors, Joybird has you covered. But if you like the bright colors like me, Joybird is the best.
If you like things that look like a bright yellow villain's cape, Joybird is perfect.
Hey, look, Melania's cape was good for what it was, all I'm saying. but also a couch in that cape and like fabric, I'd probably like.
I think you would. And they'd have it because Joybird has over 50 fabric and leather options. They've got 3 shades of wood, over 250 unique silhouettes, which is insane. You can just create your own furniture and they'll hand make it for you.
And whether your style is mid-century or modern or boho or you're not really sure, Joybird has you covered. Follow their Instagram for ideas. Figure out what you want for your house.
They also have a autumn daydream lookbook, which is pretty adventurous. It's had some really unique room designs and combinations, real bold colors. And I love actually all the different fabrics. You can get velvets if you want. I mean, a velvet sofa. I might go for velvet.
I can see that. And also, you want to try it out? You can get a 365-day home trial. Skip the furniture store and bring the showroom home. Sit on it, sleep on it, break it in. And if you don't love it, but you will, return it.
That's kind of amazing. That's one whole year you can try out your Joybird.
Like, yeah, is this couch the best? Yep, it's definitely the best. I'll keep it.
So, create furniture that matches your own fearless style at joybird.com/45th and see how Joybird can help make your dream space a reality today. Once again, that's joybird.com/45th and receive an exclusive offer for 25% off your first order by using the code 45th. Now, these reports are based on all the testimony, right, that was provided and all the other evidence that didn't make it. I mean, like, we didn't see, like, all the investigation that happened before the testimony, public testimony took place. So these reports probably have a lot more than we know from before. And I did see you tweet something about, oh, yeah, what am I saying? Hello, all the calls, the phone calls, that came from the report, right?
Oh, yeah. So, like, the silence, like, I still have a very huge I'm still working through this one.
The Giuliani calls.
There's something going on there. Well, let's back up a bit.
So Nunes. Yep. Go ahead.
Oh, that stuff too. So here is like my when I got the report from the majority, the first thing I wanted to care about was like how they handle the Sondland calls. So 30-second rundown. Sondland
Susan's
says,
like, let me fix this for you.
Yeah. Like Sondland says that he had this phone call with Trump. He calls Trump and he's like, "What the fuck do you want from Ukraine?" That's literally what he says.
Of course, that's
something. Trump says, "I don't want nothing. No quid pro quo. No quid pro quo. I don't want anything. I want him to do the right thing. Zelensky to do the right thing." And he says this call happens September 9th, and that it happens because he got a text from the charge, the ambassador to Ukraine, roughly, Bill Taylor, when he was saying like, "This is crazy. We're holding up security assistance in exchange for investigations. Like, what the hell?" According to Sondland, that's why he calls Trump and asked what the fuck do you want from Ukraine. Now, the problem is that, like, he did not call the 9th because the others who knew about the call, including Tim Morrison, who was the deputy director of Eurasian Affairs for NSC, and also Bill Taylor, who got briefed on the same day it happened, both recorded the call happening on the 7th. And they had documents to back it up. Sondland's got nothing because Sondland's this businessman who doesn't do shit. But the Taylor and Morrison. Like, well, Morrison, he gets a call from Sondland. Sondland's like, hey, I talked to Trump. Trump said no quid pro quo. But also, he wants Zelensky personally to go up to a microphone and announce investigations. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we're at a stalemate. Morrison hears this and he's like, that is not remotely legal. I'm going to go tell Bolton. Bolton hears it and he's like, you're going to the lawyers right now to cover your ass.
And then Bolton gets fired.
Yeah. Well, this is like 2 days later, Bolton does leave. So I'm still thinking there's this connection there.
Right.
But Bolton, and this is the only good thing you'll ever hear me say about Bolton, ever, ever. Bolton looks out for his subordinates. Mm. He is consistently through this whole affair, has, whenever he's had an employee or someone below him who has gotten exposed by this mess, he has proactively made sure they are protected mm-hmm. to the extent he could. In doing so, create a paper trail that, if we ever got, would be damning for Trump.
Right. But so let me ask you, though, what is the significance of, like, let's say Sondland said it was the 9th and it was the 7th. So what? I mean, maybe he just forgot.
Yeah, because Sondland says that the call is just like no quid pro quo. The two others who knew about it both said it was no quid pro quo, but here is the exact quid pro quo I'm demanding from Ukraine,
right?
Or else something will go forward. And we also know from Bill Taylor that not only was it that, it was that the same time this happened with Trump, the next day, within 24 hours, Sondland has also talked to President Zelensky of Ukraine and gotten Zelensky to agree to go in front of a microphone on CNN and announce investigations. Long story short, it is very much apparent from the record that what did happen is that Trump told Sondland what he wanted from Ukraine. Then Sondland went to Ukraine and arranged the deal, got their consent, full steam ahead. Sondland was the go-between. He was the middleman who secured the quid pro quo, who secured the foreign bribery exchange.
Are you saying even though Sondland revised his testimony over and over, he still kind of didn't come clean?
I'm saying that every revision was designed to hide the fact that he was the guy who arranged the whole bribery scheme.
Okay. So how did the majority report check out on those calls?
Well, here's an interesting point. So they did, the majority report basically called Sondland on his bullshit. They said this is not, it couldn't have been the 9th. It was the 7th. All the evidence shows this. There was a quid pro quo. There was everything that Morrison and Taylor said happened. It was not just this innocent call, which is even like obvious because Sondland himself doesn't deny anything. He's like, oh, Morrison and Taylor said this happened? Okay. I mean, I have no reason to disagree with them. Morrison and Taylor says on the 7th? Oh, okay. Don't disagree with them. I just don't recall it.
Yeah.
And he actually, Sondland even recalls a conversation, which he was told there was this quid pro quo for the security systems for the investigations. He just can't recall if the phone call was with Giuliani or with Trump.
Ooh.
So, like, he recalls all of it. Just not the part where he then called Zelensky and got the quid pro quo arranged.
To be fair, there were a lot of phone calls happening.
Here's what comes down to my big what the fuck from the report. And I don't know what's going on, but there's something up there. Turns out the House majority subpoenaed cell phone records from Giuliani and Sondland. They got Sondland's Verizon cell phone records. They have them. They know when he called, who he called, like how long the calls lasted. And yet in their report, they cite them only twice for relatively innocuous calls. And they like August, I think, 8th, and then another date much earlier. And
okay, I have a theory, Susan. I have a theory because I'm thinking, why did they not even like grill him about this when he testified? My theory is that they did not realize any of this until somebody saw your Twitter thread and they're like, shit, we got to get these phone records.
But they had, here's the thing, they had the phone records. I think they already had them at some point. Maybe not when they talked to him, but they had them.
They didn't realize
if you want to confirm, and the report does basically say the call is the 7th, not the 9th. You want to confirm that? Well, you use his cell phone records to show he called on the 7th, not the 9th.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't do that, which is
weird.
And also the other call that's been concern is the July 26th call, the one where he was at the restaurant over a bottle of wine. He's like, Zelensky loves your ass.
I remember
that's another call in dispute. And if you have the cell phone records from Sondland, you could use them to confirm this call happened.
Right.
In the report, they don't cite the cell phone records. They have the Verizon records. They don't cite that. They say the White House agrees this call happened was 5 minutes long. So they're... I don't know why, but House Majority is hiding something to do with Sondland's cell phone records.
Well, okay, if they're saying basically it's kind of like the White House is stipulating, yeah, it happened. So then why did they even need to cite it? I mean, like if everybody's like, yeah, it happened.
Well, no, they wouldn't because they got the stipulation from the White House. But the other stuff they could use the phone records for, they're not using them. And I don't understand why. I mean, I'm not saying it's nefarious or anything. It could be. I mean, my concern is like if you have proof of what happened, why aren't you using it?
Mm-hmm.
But to me, it's more so like you are selectively using this evidence twice discreetly for innocuous purposes. And the House minority is not using it to show something else happened. So presumably it's not supporting their theories either. Like, what are you holding back?
Maybe they just aren't connecting dots, Susan.
No. Like, they cite all the time those records. They cited the hell out of Giuliani's calls. They cited the hell out of the calls. There's something that I don't know why yet. But
it's going to come to you in your sleep.
Yeah. I'll wake up like 3 a.m. and be like, it was this.
Yep.
So anyway, that's my mystery right now for that. But the other surprising thing from the phone call records, guess who was talking to Giuliani
and Nunes.
Lev Parnas? Oh, my God.
Let's see. And this happened like right after Nunes like sued CNN,
like
right?
Hours. Yeah, it was really good timing.
All right. Let's tell our listeners like what actually, I mean, so what happened is Nunes sued CNN after CNN reported that he was having some calls with, or that he had calls with Ukraine, or what was it? What was it that he was suing them over? Like, I don't know the exact allegation, but I know it was related to him saying that I had nothing to do with any of this.
So CNN ran a report about what Lev Parnas had told them.
Oh, that's right. And he called Lev a liar, basically.
And Lev is a liar. Lev is like the J of the impeachment story.
We always have our J.
Yeah, like, you don't believe, like, to be fair, yes, don't believe a word that Lev Parnas says.
And then Lev Parnas' lawyers are like, oh, here's some records.
Well, yeah, so Nunes, like filed defamation suit against CNN. He, like, sues them for, like, false statements because they said that he met the former chief prosecutor in Ukraine, Shokin, in Vienna during a trip he made there in late 2018 in order to try and find dirt on Biden. And I think there probably were problems with CNN. Well, CNN, they were very clear that it was all coming from Lev Parnas.
Mm-hmm.
I think there probably were problems with Lev Parnas' story. But when you look at what Nunes is actually complaining about as, like, the chief pillars of the, like, wrong claims, none of them have to do with the parts of the story about him working to find dirt on Biden. It all has to do with, like, the times. Like, he's like, oh, I did not talk to Shokin in December of 2018.
I spoke to him at another time. Yeah, an earlier date or later date.
Yeah, it's things like that. It's like, you're being very precise here. And then again, he also says, not in the main claims, but one of the paragraphs, he's like, CNN said that I talked to Lev Parnas. This is false and unverifiable. Well, guess what the majority report released 3 hours later shows?
I got to give it up for Adam Schiff, because he knew. They knew. They've got this information. They're sitting on it, and they got to put up with Nunes' bullshit throughout the hearings. But here's what I don't understand, because I want to know who the hell is representing Nunes. Because if he came to me and I would say, are you sure you want to litigate this? Open all this shit up for, like, deposition and discovery? Are you sure about this? He couldn't have won a lawsuit like this knowing that the reporting's accurate.
He ain't in it to win it. He sued a cow, for God's sake.
Okay, but still.
He's trying to shut them up.
Yeah.
He can always bail before discovery.
That's true.
He can always run expenses, make it, like, really hard for them to defend, shut them down early. And ideally, you can get, like, a settlement. It's like, they don't pay money because they don't have any money to pay in the first place. Well, the cow doesn't. But CNN would. But the cow definitely doesn't have no money to pay. So theoretically, ideal, like, best case scenario, you file a suit, get all the headlines, you
get a
bankrupt
settlement.
The cow, mm-hmm. and get the cow to sign a settlement that says, like, you don't owe any money, but you drop all charges. Yeah.
Right.
Good and done. So the whole point of this is just to make it really expensive and challenging to ever write a story on Devin Nunes.
Mm. Okay, so then Lev Parnas' attorney's like, here you go, for the world to see. Here's his records.
Well, he didn't even do that. That came from the
Oh, it
the
came
from
the report. It came from the Okay.
And let's be clear. Lev Parnas is a lying, cheating con
mm-hmm,
artist.
Mm-hmm.
So don't believe any shit he says unless he's got like 20 records to prove it. But on the other hand, here's what his game plan is. And I'll wait to see how his attorney handles it, but it could be a pretty masterful play if it works out. What they're trying to do is to Iran-Contra the shit. they want to have Lev Parnas get immunity from Congress so he can testify and say everything he knows and probably lots of things he doesn't know because that's who he is, and avoid criminal charges. And at this point, I'm like, you know what? Let him. There's enough charges against him that don't involve Trump or Giuliani or anyone where he'll still get prison time. He'll still get charged. Like, he's not going to escape this. Like, there's nothing for him to escape all the
way. Right.
But I'd be fine at this point with letting chips fall where they may for the other charges.
So, okay, just so I can be clear, with Parnas, what is the proceeding in which this is going to happen? He's going to get immunity from what entity? From who?
From Congress.
From Congress. That the DOJ would not charge him after his test? Or, like, that's what I'm trying to figure out. It's,
well,
like,
the DOJ could charge him, but they would still be screwed. So, like, what happened with Anacontra is, like, you know, this is how Oliver North is still walks among us.
Right.
A figure that everyone still considers respectable somehow. He testified before Congress about Anacontra, but he got immunity to do so. And then when the DOJ later tried to charge him, there were issues proving that what they charged him with had no connection to what he'd admitted to under oath in front of Congress, which they couldn't use. DOJ could have charged him, theoretically, if the DOJ made their own case without ever knowing or using or hearing about what he testified to, he could still be charged with it. But that's so problematic, it doesn't work out in real life. So the judge was not going to allow it. So if Parnas can get immunity from Congress to tell what he knows, it would be basically impossible for the DOJ to bring charges based on anything he talked about.
Okay. Speaking of which, and this is totally an aside, but just yesterday, the DOJ, did you hear about the DOJ charges leveled at a couple of folks on making illegal campaign contributions to Hillary Clinton?
Oh, yeah. Those guys suck.
Yeah. Apparently some foreign money. We don't know.
Yeah, that was Nader. That's like the dark, sick underbelly of
Nader Khwaja. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So these guys, so like a lot of these guys, they're not Trump fans. They're not like on the MAGA train. They are long-term parasites on our system and equal opportunity offenders. They are they are not committed to working with Republicans.
Yeah.
They're fine with working Democrats. Yeah. They just got to find a way to channel money their way.
Yeah. Okay. Do you think Stitch Fix has capes?
Oh my God, I need to figure this out.
Yeah.
Be like, right into my style advisor. I need the best cape you have, please.
What will make me look like I kill
puppies? I want to channel Melania's style.
You know what? Stitch Fix stylists are amazing. If that's what you wanted, they would make it happen. Simple as that.
I'm like secretly, yeah, I would totally rock that. Like,
and you know what? You could carry it. You've got the shoulders. Now I would look like a bow bun. So, getting back to Stitch Fix, we love Stitch Fix, and we've been using it for a couple years. And Stitch Fix, I have seen you in some amazing outfits by Stitch Fix. I've gotten some beautiful accessories from them. Let's tell our listeners all about Stitch Fix.
Stitch Fix is great. Like, for me, like, as a woman attorney trying to make it in this hard world, like, looking good is, like, a lot of the job. When you show up in court, you have to look professional, or no one's going to take you seriously. And I don't inherently love clothes. I fucking hate shopping, to be real. So for me, Stitch Fix is amazing because I can get clothes that look good and I get instructions on how to pair them. So I have an outfit that looks like I'm actually what I'm doing. I don't really, but it looks like it's all fine. And Stitch Fix is amazing at that.
Yeah, because they have stylists that do all the work for you because it's an online personal styling service. They actually will put together the entire outfits for you, which is amazing. And they have great brands, all the brands we know and love, and exclusive styles that you actually can't find anywhere else.
Yeah, what I do is I tell them what the holes in my wardrobe are. Like, here's the things, like, I'm always like, oh shit, I'm going to this. I got nothing to wear.
Yeah.
I'm like, here's what I don't have clothes for. Help me out. They give you outfits that fit that exact scenario that look amazing and are useful elsewhere. Yeah. So,
and you know, the other thing I liked actually doing with Stitch Fix, because I also, you know, we kind of all have ruts, right? We kind of do the same look over and over. I was like, I want to kind of try something different. So I worked with my stylist to try something a little bit different. I got like kind of a little bohemian vibe going with a couple of the outfits I got. And I liked that because it helped me feel younger.
I wear floral prints now. I didn't do floral prints because I don't know. It seemed too hard. But now I have I'm looking at my closet right now because I actually record in my closet. So I've got a lot of floral prints, which I kind of like now. And it's purely because of Stitch Fix. Yeah.
Yep. Thank you for that.
Yeah, so get started today at stitchfix.com/45th and get an extra 25% off when you keep everything in your box. That's stitchfix.com/45th. stitchfix.com/45th.
That takes us to, so let's talk a little bit about what the records show in terms of the calls with Giuliani and Nunes. There was something I briefly saw that Giuliani was making calls from the Situation Room. What is he doing?
No, to it.
Oh, to it. Okay.
Yeah. I am still going through it, so I can't even give too much in-depth there, but.
And right now, he's actually, isn't Giuliani in Ukraine right now?
Giuliani's in Ukraine right now. Oh, no, he's actually, he's in Hungary. He's somewhere over there. Talking to Shokin and Lutsenko. It's insane. This is all a nightmare.
What is he doing? I mean, he's trying.
Filming a documentary to counteract the impeachment. Is what he says he's doing. I mean, in reality, he's trying to coordinate stories with other witnesses.
Right. A week ago, he said he was going to do a podcast. I thought, oh, maybe this is his podcast.
Oh, I was really excited for that. I would like some people apparently at a restaurant in New York like heard him talking about his plans for a podcast.
Yeah.
Apparently very in-depth and like talking about like how we would talk to plan a podcast. Like,
I can guarantee you this man doesn't even know how to listen to a podcast.
That's what citizens are for.
Yeah, that's right.
So, but no podcast, sad for us. There's no podcast from Giuliani. Just this documentary from OANN.
And OANN, isn't that like a Russia-connected network?
No, it's just like stupid.
A right-wing network. Okay, so bunch of calls. I guess we'll get around to seeing what that was all about. I mean, Nunes was asked about it yesterday in the media. I don't know what channel he was on. He just bumbled through maybe I would have remembered calling Parn. I don't really know. Oh, I guess he was indicted. It was a terrible non-answer. But he looked like a deer caught in headlights, so haven't heard from him since.
It's very clear that Nunes was involved in this whole scandal. I mean, so here's why I think it's kind of sad, because like it's clear the impeachment inquiry is not going to get this whole story. But I think Nunes' involvement does show what the dynamic of what was happening here in Ukraine, and how months ago, a year ago now, and into 2018, this campaign started kicking up in full gear. And consistently, Ukraine didn't go along with it. So you have Nunes in 2018 and Giuliani in 2018, like November, December, reaching out to Lutsenko, reaching out to Shokin, trying to put together this narrative. Then in January, you have the Ukrainians coming over to New York to meet and give more information. And then February, March, April, you have Giuliani hitting up Pompeo at State to give him information and try and like get out Yovanovitch, the ambassador to Ukraine, and trying to get their plan through. And it's not totally working. The U.S. side works. They get Yovanovitch out. That's fine. But Ukraine does not quite go along with what they're wanting. And all of this leads up to the frustration, and Giuliani starts rage tweeting on Twitter like May, April through June about how, oh, and then of course in the middle of all this, you have the Ukrainian elections, and suddenly Poroshenko's out. Mm-hmm. So Zelensky's in. So that changes all the plans, whatever they had in place is gone. And they're trying to reestablish stuff. So Nunes' involvement comes at a time when they're like just ramping up, when they're early stages, they're hoping they can quietly behind the scenes work something out. It didn't happen. The ideal scenario for Nunes would have been like Ukraine agreed.
And here's the thing. This was well before I think the public knew that Biden was going to run. But do you think this was just like a preemptive?
We all knew he was going to run.
Girl, I did not know. I was shocked and upset when he put his hat in the ring. I was like, no, stay away.
Here's why like, I'm a little bit torn. It's like, it's not going to affect my, like, what Trump is doing is awful. And I will never, like, it's just fucking awful. So whatever. But at the same time, like, the one candidate, like, I wouldn't mind seeing getting knocked out by Trump's bullshit is probably Biden.
Yeah. Well, okay. I'm kind of feeling like that with Pete, too. But, so Kamala Harris just, you know, withdrew yesterday, and I think there's probably been a deal made that just makes sense to me that she might be running with.
And Biden Kamala is the worst buddy cop movie ever made.
It is. I'm like, of all the combinations, these candidates, this would be like my least favorite. But
this is the one that like wants. Well, okay, that's not true. There's definitely like a worse combination out there.
Wait,
Marianne Williamson.
Okay, look, she
Bloomberg.
okay, but I guess viable combinations is what I was looking at, but those are just totally not viable combinations. But no, it's kind of sad now. The debate stage is going to be pretty devoid of any color, and I think at this point Cory Booker is even struggling. He's probably not going to make it on the December debate stage, and Castro's out of that as well. So anyway, all right.
Point being, we say without any kind of regard for Biden or any desire to see him succeed. What Trump's doing is wrong.
Right. Look, I mean, like, at the end of the day, it's not like if Biden becomes the president, I'm going to be like, I'm not going to be excited.
It'll be fine.
It will be fine. Oh, okay. Exactly. At least things will kind of normalize
it's
for a bit.
Fine. Like, it's not the worst thing that could happen, but whatever.
Not the worst. It's close, but all right.
It's not close. It's fine. It's like a lukewarm tea. It's fine.
That's right. Lukewarm. Which, by the way, I am sipping right now to stay awake for the rest of this episode.
mean?
It's kind of gross. It's got a film on top, but it's okay. All right. So let's talk about...
analogy works too well.
Yeah, it works really well. So let's talk a little bit about the beginning of the House Judiciary hearings. Were you glued to it all day?
I got to see the first 2 hours, and after that I was bouncing around. I didn't get to see much of it, which from what I've heard, I probably didn't miss too much, but I wish I could have seen it.
I also saw the first, I think, 2 or 3 hours. I mean, but again, it wasn't like constant. I had it running as I'm doing other things, and then the rest of the late afternoon, I just couldn't get around to it. But I did watch kind of the opening statements of the three witnesses they had today. Now, it's interesting. And okay, first of all, I remember before this began, was it late last week where Trump's lawyers announced that none of us are going to be coming, none of us are participating in this at all. And then today, the GOP, Collins, in his opening statement was like, this is bullshit, there's no fact witnesses, it's all going to be like, we're just supposed to take what, you know, intelligence gave us, House Intelligence Committee gave us. And yeah, what they had the opportunity to present, like their own, you know, for them to participate in the hearing, for them to question these witnesses, and even, I assume, to present some witnesses. Because they, one of the people who testified today, oh yeah, there are four, excuse me, I was not even counting the fourth, Tully.
Turley,
yeah, excuse me. They can, so that's on them. But this is interesting, though. There won't be any fact witnesses presented in 2 weeks of hearings, is that right?
We don't know what's going to happen next. It's the schedule ahead is not certain yet.
It's not. So why are they saying that? They're just talking about today?
Look, Collins is just bitter because he had his nice little Senate position, hand to him on a platter, and Kemp smacked it down in Georgia.
Okay. Yep, right. That just happened, right? That just happened. I heard a little bit about that. Okay.
When evil fights evil, it's like Brian Kemp fighting Donald Trump.
Which is really interesting, that whole thing. So,
well, Kemp knows. So, like, Trump just wants his, like, best, like, strident, most, like, Foxworthy defenders in the Senate.
Foxworthy. I like that.
So he wants Collins there.
Right.
And Kemp is still a politician. He's like, I want to get reelected. So, right. Like, I'm going to choose my, like, CEO with big pockets who can fund her reelection effort.
Yeah.
And also, it's a woman, so guess I'm not so terrible after all, right, Democrats in Georgia?
And the objection, really, from Trump is that she's just not, so far, is not, like, lockstep with this administration. She's not extreme enough. She's not right-wing enough.
They want Georgia to be an extreme state. It's a swing state now.
That's
like, it's a
amazing
Republican-leaning one, but it's, you can't, I mean, Kemp is right. His political instincts are totally right in this one. I don't know if his choice is, like, the best one he could have gone with, but, like, probably a small pool. But he's totally right. Him choosing Collins ain't going to help Collins, ain't going to help him. It'll only help Trump.
Yeah. What's the name of his appointee?
It was a hard to pronounce name, and I've forgotten it already.
Okay, but she has no political experience,
no,
right?
No, she's a CEO. Like, she's like a rich business person,
yeah,
which Trump would normally like. But also, she knows what's going on. She knows that her ability to be reelected when the seat is up for election again very shortly depends on her not being a Trump toady.
Yeah.
So she'll definitely be a Republican. She's not going to vote for Democrats at any point, but she won't be the full-on toady that he wants.
Well, Kemp's response to all the attacks from Trump and you know, Trump toadies was, which I just think is remarkable that they're launching this attack against a member of their own party because she's not extreme enough. Kemp's response was, well, look, she still believes in, you know, the Second Amendment and anti-abortion, and that's all that matters. And I guess in a way it is all that matters to these folks.
So, but it's not though. Like I mean, yes, traditionally it is, but they would be thrilled. They'd be fine if he found someone who was pro-abortion, wanted to take all the guns away, but was a Trump sycophant in a regular way. Like, that's their main concern right now.
Really?
Yeah. Absolutely.
That would be interesting if somebody
like
that.
It'd be hard to find someone like that, but like they're less concerned with her.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
Adherence to those like two lodestars of Republican politics, and more with her ability to walk the Trump line all the time.
See, I guess the way I see it is, when I keep thinking about why are they laying down their like entire careers and lives and principle all for this man, I keep coming back to because he has handed them the Supreme Court, and he is on these two issues, which are so important to the GOP. He's exactly where, like, he's basically delivering the agenda. So
they're not that important to the GOP. They're important to GOP primary voters, but GOP itself, less likely to. Okay, look, the GOP like has ran how many elections on the deficit, and it's exploded into Trump. No one gives a shit.
Yeah, because it's not sexy. I mean, but abortion and guns.
Okay, it was sexy enough in 2012.
Okay.
So, Rabia, how are your boobs today?
My boobs are okay. They're okay. They're kind of, you know, it's like every time I have a baby, I have different boobs.
Oh, no.
You may not know this yet, Susan, but it's...
I don't want to know that. Like, I always know my size. I don't want to change that.
Oh, they will change. They will change. Enjoy what you got. Anyway, yeah. Boobs change. That's just how it is. And everybody has like totally different shape boobs. Sometimes your two boobs are not the exact same size and shape. I mean, like, you know, women, the whole spectrum. So
finding a bra is hard. That's like, it's really hard. It's like a daily struggle dudes have no idea about that. Like trying to find the bra that's for your clothes, like is hidden above the clothes you're wearing. It doesn't cost $1 million.
Yep.
Have you seen the ad where it's like, not even an ad, it's like a clip. It's like asking guys, what do you think a bra costs? And they're like, I don't know, $20.
Oh yes, I have. I have no idea what they're talking about. No. I mean, obviously, if you want a bra that has a great fit, you know, supports you well, at lasts, feels comfortable, it does not cost $20. It will cost more than that, but it also doesn't have to empty your pocketbook. I mean, that's why Third Love is the go-to place for people with boobs, basically.
Perfect fit, good price, convenient. What more do you want?
Third Love has more than 80 sizes, and they have half cup sizes, which really, until I started using Third Love bras, I never saw before.
Yeah, like, we're not all, like, A's, B's, C's, or whatevers. There's us in the middles.
A.5s, B.5s.
B.5, that's what I'm saying from now on, I'm B.5.
That's right. And the way you find your perfect fit, I don't know if you've ever been in for a bra fitting, it's no fun, but you don't have to do that with Third Love because they have a fit finder quiz. You just answer some questions and in 60 seconds, you got your perfect fit.
Yeah. And it's hands down the most comfortable bra you'll ever own. Sounds like a low bar, but these are actually comfortable.
There's no tag. I hate the label tags that are in the back. They always itch me.
No tag, no like flourishes, no lacy ass bullshit.
Yep. But they do have pretty bras, yeah. So.
And but they're also pretty. Like, that's all you need.
Yeah. Now, look, Third Love knows there's a perfect bra for everybody. So right now they're offering our listeners 15% off your first order. Just got to go to thirdlove.com/45th now to find your perfect fitting bra and get 15% off your first purchase. So if you have boobs, go to thirdlove.com/45th and get 15% off today. So what did you think about the witnesses today? So they're all kind of legal scholars, basically. That's who testified today.
Yeah, it was, I mean, I went back and forth on this. I do think Democrats made a mistake in not pulling in a Fed Soc Never Trumper for one of the witnesses. I get why they didn't. I get why they didn't want to. I mean, at the end of the day, it wouldn't make things less partisan. It wouldn't make things less like, oh, look, all these lefty anti-Trumpers, because they just call them Never Trumpers and move on. But I think it would have benefited from having, maybe not a Fed Soc, because that's a little bit too much, but having a Never Trumper law professor on there, I think would have been important. So I think that was a mistake. I think having Turley there was a mistake all around. Like, that was nonsense.
But Turley, I'm assuming, was there on the invitation of the House minority.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Turley is a younger version of Dershowitz. Allegedly a lefty Democrat.
How? But
what? Oh, he's
like, how?
Like,
how
is it's he like elected? Dershowitz. Dershowitz like claims he's a Democrat too.
Yeah,
and then just always happens to go with like the white male power structure.
Mm-hmm.
Turley was awful. It was so bullshit.
Okay. So basically you had three witnesses who were like there's like multiple articles of impeachment that can come out of this president's behavior, from high crimes and misdemeanors, you know, bribery. I mean, like they're like, there's just nothing. I mean, it's just so clear. Whereas Turley was like, I mean, he almost kind of made the civility argument. He made like a civility. He's like, you know, look, guys, like, you know, we gotta be more reasonable here.
My golden doodle's mad.
I was just kind of like, I mean, it's almost like if this doesn't rise to, because what he said was, what was the word? And actually, Dershowitz actually tweeted about it today, I think. Misadministration, right? That's what it's called?
Maladministration.
See, that doesn't, is that a word? Misadministration. Okay, whatever. So maladministration. That what he's saying is, none of this was corruption. It was just like poor administrative.
He's saying that Trump was really bad at having his bribery scheme carried out. So that's maladministration, right?
Well, what he is saying, whatever he's saying that none of this rises to the level of impeachment, that, you know, the House is rushing on all of this, which is actually not true. By the way, I read today that articles of impeachment were issued against Nixon on day 72 after the inquiry had begun. And we are at day 71 already with this one. So not rushing it.
No pun intended.
No, sorry. Exactly. No pun intended. What's going to happen tomorrow? So these guys wrapped up. What's her name? The female. I'm so sorry. I can't remember her name. She was amazing, I thought. Astonishing. She was incredible. Very powerful. Her testimony. Everybody's testimony was except for this Turley guy.
From a legal standpoint, I think like they had three professors from a very similar school of thought. And right. I do think it would be more powerful if they had tried to get more diverse bench. Mm-hmm. I get why. Like, it's not like – it's not even for the like bipartisanship. They never would get that ever. But – not bipartisanship, but like diverse schools of thought, I think would have been a benefit for the hearing. And the whole point is to be like, yes, there's very firm constitutional grounds for why forcing other countries to investigate your political rivals is bad. And I got that across. And then Turley was there just to embarrass himself. It is interesting. Like, so Turley was the best they could get. The Republicans chose a nominally liberal law professor.
I really hope Giuliani shows up to testify for the House Republicans. Wish. That would be amazing. Or Dershowitz. Yeah, that'd be great too. All right. So anything else to say about today? Do we know what's coming up the rest of this week? Are there more hearing?
We don't know, actually. It's been ambiguous what's happening next. So the report just came out yesterday, Tuesday. So there's time to adjust that, time to see where to go. I mean, like, here's where we are really in the world. The evidence is overwhelming. We know what Trump did. There are questions on some issues that remain, but like the big picture, like the thing that matters, did Trump abuse his office in order to try and coerce a small foreign state to help his election in 2020? Yes. There's no factual dispute yet. So where do you go from there? Like, if you're the majority, where do you go from
this? But here's the thing, though, Susan. Certainty? That's exactly what Collins was saying. Collins is saying that there is a factual dispute. What you're saying is that's not what happened. He's saying that's not what happened. He said it was about the corruption.
But what they're saying, like, their statement that there is a dispute is disconnected from the facts. So it doesn't matter. Like, they will never not have him saying that.
Right.
So we're at the point now where, like, actually there aren't any facts actually in this. Like, we know enough to know what happened that this is what it is. So it was, I think it was important to lay out why what we know happened, why that's impeachable, which is what they're trying to do today. And I guess here's where, like, political strategy comes against the whole constitutional idealism, is that there are Democrats from states or from districts that voted for Trump, and they don't want a broad impeachment inquiry. They want to have a narrow, focused one. But we know Trump should be, like, the facts show that Trump did the exact thing the founders wanted presidents to be impeached for. That's done. And I think, yes, it'd be more valuable to explain why there's, like, also a dozen more reasons why he should be impeached. But that's not politically possible right now. So we're at this crossroads where Republicans will say it's not been proven. It has been. We know it's impeachable, and
I mean, certainly the House is going to issue articles of impeachment. I don't think there's any, you can't come impeached. This, yeah, he's going to be impeached. The question, I mean, this, but they want to take this vote before the end of the year, is what I understand, and which means then after the holidays, it goes to the Senate, and then it just dies, right? Like, that's what it is.
So I think, I mean, not that I don't want to trust McConnell for a fucking heartbeat, but it seems like, based on what we know so far, that the Senate is committed to holding a trial. And they said about like 6 weeks. I don't know if that's true. I mean, so here's where there's different dynamics at play. Obviously, the Republicans don't want to have a long, drawn-out trial. But there's an advantage for Republicans to have a drawn-out trial in the middle of January and February, in the middle of the primary season.
Right.
So their desire to shut this down quick is at war with their desire to have the several senators who are
campaigning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Being locked up within this. So, you know, that could be good for us in the end of the day, that they have a reason to keep us going. So I'll go to the Senate. And here's what comes down to Democratic strategy and why they have not, I hope, why they've not forced the testimony from those who matter the most. So back up to Turley. Amid all of his babble, his one coherent complaint is that this has gone too fast. There are witnesses with factual information that can be known who have not testified. They haven't testified because they're disregarding subpoenas from the House. The Congress, the House has to give power on this point, because guess who is the judge and the only judge at an impeachment trial?
McConnell?
Chief Justice Roberts.
Oh, shit, really? The swing vote. That's right. You're right. I did read that.
The swing vote. So here's part of why it's not worth going through court proceedings. Basically, all these decisions, they're going to be decided by Roberts anyway. Yeah. Like, Roberts is the one who would be, his vote would be decisive if it went through the normal court process.
So, okay, let me ask you this. Let's say Robert votes in favor of the of impeaching Trump.
He doesn't vote there. He does not have a vote in how the impeachment goes. He just conducts a trial.
He's
a literal judge. He's a literal judge.
I see. Okay.
He gets to, this is why in the Constitution, he is obligated to get a slightly higher salary than the rest of the court.
Oh, I see. Just in case of this.
I mean, it will be a pain in the ass for him. He'll have to, like, do hearings, Supreme Court in the morning, and then, like, run over to Senate and, like, do the trial there. So
Okay.
He's going to earn his pay this time around.
Oh, God. Okay. Well, I mean, I'm just rubbing my forehead because I'm like,
Roberts is the best Supreme Court Republican justice we could hope for.
That is true. That is true. All right, so today, as all this began, Trump returned from NATO unexpectedly.
Oh, yeah, that happened.
Can we talk about that briefly? When did NATO begin? Like 3 days ago, 2 days ago in the UK? He had a presser where basically I think Trump sat in the same position in the same chair and heads of state kept coming and going in the chair next to him.
I didn't watch any of it. I just didn't care.
Oh, God, Susan. From Macron to Trudeau to, it was just a shit show. It was so embarrassing. I mean, there's so many highlights. And then the most embarrassing part of it is when they all kind of were hanging out, Macron.
I did see that.
Yep. Let's see, who else was there? Of all people, Boris Johnson was in the mix.
Like, he's just lurking there, like bobbing around. Like, it's like sad little like.
I know. I'm like, first of all, you know Trudeau and Macron are like, no, dude, you do not belong in our little huddle here.
They wanted him there for like it was, let's be real, that was a total mean girls move.
It was on purpose.
A full-on mean girls move. Yes. And there's no female politician in the world who could pull it off, but because of dude privilege, they could do it and pulled it off well.
Yeah
they
so
knew
they were
being filmed. They knew
of course filmed. Of course they're not stupid, they're like professionals, they know that. So yeah, they were filmed mocking Trump, making fun of Trump, and I didn't think there was anything they said that was deeply insulting. They were just like,
"Oh, it was light ribbing."
Yeah, it was light ribbing. But that, you know, our thin-skinned president, the very next day, he had a presser the next morning. That was this morning, I guess. He canceled it and came right on home. Was like, and he said, "Trudeau is two-faced."
And then he was caught, like, he said, like, "Wasn't it funny when I said Trudeau was two-faced?"
Right, yeah. Dude, sure. No. Yeah, no. I know you're really concerned about blackface, Trump.
Okay, that is funny. I didn't actually make that connection.
I don't think he made that connection, Susan. People are just making it for him afterwards. After he said it, they're like, oh, yeah, that's why he said it.
No, okay, that is a little funny, though.
Anyway, so here's what I want to know. Does this mean, like, he'll never go back to another? Oh, well, hopefully he never goes back, but because of the election, but I wonder if like what this bodes for like this coming year of relations between France and Canada and everything.
Yeah. Well, also because the way it was like stationed, I feel like Trudeau like may have drawn the short straw there because the rest of them are back to it. Trudeau was the one fully exposed. I feel like this was a Macron move. He was the one who like arranged all this. So Trudeau takes most of the shit. Boris is there being the little like dumpling dancing around like, oh, her, that's really funny. And he like escapes all of it.
I mean, I feel like Trump is not going to let any of them escape any of it. I think
he's only attacked Trudeau. He's not actually expressed any like animosity towards the others.
The others, yeah, but you know he's seething because what Trump demands is loyalty, is affirmative loyalty. Like what he would have wanted was for Boris Johnson to step up and be like, "Don't talk about my," you know what I mean? That's what I think. I think it's going to be within the next 48 hours. We will see tweets. Is what I think. If not tonight.
My guess is they'll be Trudeau focused, though, because he knows he can't go to war with the whole NATO. So he'll choose one victim, and it's going to be Trudeau.
Trudeau don't care.
Here's my bet. I'm betting $20 right now to no one. Tomorrow I'll wake up to a tweet about Trudeau's like milk tariffs.
Oh, God. Okay. All right. Trudeau's like, whatever. Bring it, dude.
Well, the thing for them, like, it's also at this point, it's a political benefit to be shown.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
like you don't want to be in Trump's thrall. That's not going to help you politically at home.
Yeah, and they can see their longevity in their political careers, where clearly that is not going to happen. I mean, the best case scenario for Trump is he gets 4 more years and that's it. Do we want to talk about pardons?
No, I think I can't. I'm too depressed for that tonight.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
Like, oh God, the war crime stuff, we'll go back to that because it's just fucking sickening.
Yeah, Trump loves war criminals. We'll just leave it there and we'll get back to another time. All right. Okay, well, Susan, thank you so much. Enjoy being a DC pundit. It is exhausting. Here's what I want to know. A couple of times, so I have, this was years ago, back like you, when I used to actually write and actually write op-eds and stuff. A number of times my pieces got picked up and then I was contacted by producers. They actually sent cars to the house to take me into DC. But dude, it is a lot of work to get be on like for 5 minutes.
I live downtown basically in DC, so yeah. It's relatively convenient, which probably put in my favor. Like, hey, you need me, it's not too far from my house.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. So keep at it. And, you know, and to our loyal listeners who've been with us, you know, all this time, just watch as we blow up. Thanks to Susan Simpson being all over MSNBC. Chris Hayes and everything. All right. Have a good week, Susan. We will be back in 7 days. A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is at 45th Pod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.